Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hi, guys, and welcome to the 65th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd. My co-host today is...
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. And tonight we have another great guest lined up for you. We'd like to encourage you to keep connecting with us, leaving comments on the blog and ratings in iTunes. That greatly helps us out, and we're much appreciated for it.
This week's Edu All-Stars podcast is proudly sponsored by Miami Device. Miami Device is going to be an incredible two-day conference happening on November 6th and 7th in sunny South Florida. The keynote speakers, the featured speakers, it's amazing people that will be there, unlike any event that I can guarantee you've been to. So hopefully you can go to miamidevice.org and check them out, or go to Twitter, and they are at Miami Device, and you can find all the details there.
Then as you listen to this week's episode, if you're listening live, you can tweet using the hashtag EduAllStars, even throughout the week. If you're listening to your in your car or listening to it at your school, you can use EduAllStars. We check that hashtag regularly and retweet stuff out from there. Todd also does a good job of, tweeting some quotable moments along the way. So I hope you join in the conversation.
Well, we are pumped this week to talk to this week's guest, who is Young Sao Koo. He is an international elementary educator currently serving in Barcelona, Venezuela. So thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And my connection just went away. Did y'all hear me?
Yeah, we heard it. We got you.
Okay. So I guess the best way to start is tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into education.
Sure. I originally grew up in Colorado and... had a really nice childhood growing up in the suburbs of Denver. I got into teaching when I was in high school. I had an opportunity to actually tutor back at my old elementary school, and it was with my third and fourth grade teacher. So it was really nice to kind of return back to my third and fourth grade teacher and help her volunteer and tutor. And from there, I taught 5 years in Colorado. I taught primarily third and fourth grade, so she had a great influence. And then I also taught a year in special ed in Colorado before coming out to Venezuela, just starting my third year out here.
So what made you decide to go, be an international teacher? What brought you down to Venezuela?
So... I think I was hitting that mark of 5 years in the States, and it was year after year is getting a little bit more demanding, and it was definitely getting harder and harder. And I was starting to feel that I was losing my drive a little bit, and I needed to feel rejuvenated in a way. And it so happened that I had some friends that were teaching abroad down in Venezuela, so opportunity knocked, and I kind of just jumped aboard.
Is traveling something you did as a kid, and that's something that kind of interested you and kind of made you aware that that's a possibility?
I've always had great aspirations to kind of travel and to kind of go all over the world, but I never really did it when I was in the States. I had my dedication was to the classroom, and I think I spent most of my time really focused in the classroom. But once I got here, the conferences abroad are kind of all over the place. And so you get that opportunity to kind of balance it between traveling as well as continuing the passion to kind of explore.
Let me follow up one more time, Todd, sorry. So now that you're in Venezuela, do you travel around the world or in your region or back to the States? I mean, do you have that itch now to even travel more that you've already taken? I imagine that there's a stark contrast between Colorado and Venezuela, so you probably have a taste of something, it's cool. Let's see what else is out there.
I think it's almost becoming an addiction, yeah. Hopefully a pretty healthy addiction, but you really do gain a lot of perspective. You get to balance it. I'm still able to connect with a lot of colleagues back in Colorado, so it is kind of this interesting dichotomy between the States and living abroad, and the connections, the opportunities to network. You know, being abroad, I felt like I've been actually able to make more connections with teachers in the States as opposed to when I was in the States.
Yeah, cool.
Well, what's been the biggest thing that you've learned teaching in Venezuela?
You know, Venezuela is a really beautiful country, but they are going through a lot of interesting situations where there might be lack of resources here and there. And so just I think what I've gained from living here and teaching here is just really kids are kids no matter what. You have to bring that passion to them and in the classroom. And just really being open-minded towards whomever you are teaching. I think it's taught me to be more patient in a lot of ways here and to kind of appreciate their set of values and to kind of embrace it as well.
I think our first encounter on Twitter was, I think, back in the Teach Like a Pirate chat. Didn't you used to do that for a little while? Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's where I remember meeting you from. And so, like, what are some of the creative ways that you use? I know that you're, like, kind of big into Twitter and you use a lot of the Twitter chats, you know, yourself. So what are some of the ways that you use technology in your own classroom?
So I've transitioned out of the classroom a little bit. I co-taught third grade the last 2 years in Venezuela, and then I went into a tech coach role. But I still have a high school course, which has been really interesting as well, going from elementary to a high school level. I think, you know, being so new to Twitter, I really didn't get that opportunity until I traveled to a conference in Brazil where I started learning about all the capabilities. And that's where I was able to discover Teach Like a Pirate. And so I think the benefit of being abroad is, you know, you can take risks, you can try anything, and if you fail, it's totally okay. And we go through that process with the students, and I've done that with third graders, and I'm doing it with the high school students now. And so a lot of what we talk about now at the high school level is digital citizenship. How do you use social media to basically remix some ideas and to kind of make it your own in really creative, innovative ways? So one of the projects my high school students right now is we learned about the Ice Bucket Challenge, the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, and we kind of, you know, we asked ourselves, how can we push it to the next level? You know, we know that it's not simply just dumping ice over your head, but what is it, the message that we want to carry? So we went through a process of design thinking. We took 2 rounds of rehearsal, and they're preparing presentations, public service announcements, ready to present at the elementary grade levels pretty soon here. So that whole experience in itself has been really enlightening, and I think it's been a really cool journey just to involve that tech aspect.
So you mentioned getting connected on social media and starting on Twitter. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about what the journey has been like for you and the value that's come in and being connected?
Yeah, so like I said, I didn't get onto Twitter until, you know, just a year and a half ago. And I was attending this conference in Sao Paulo at Graded. And I attended a workshop with Will Richardson, who's the author of the TED Talk book, Why School? And he kind of just made this statement that as a professional in education, you cannot afford not to be connected and not to be using Twitter. And I found, you know, I took his words to heart, and from there, it kind of just evolved. I think what I really grasped from it was, you know, being connected doesn't mean that you have to constantly be on, but it really does open a lot of doors and lots of opportunities. I think my journey originally was thinking, you know, I don't know what this is about. I'm really afraid to tweet. I don't, you know, I was one of those really reluctant teachers that was concerned about privacy. But, you know, as soon as you kind of, you know, you go through the phases of lurking and kind of just hanging around, and I just shared out, like, my very first tweet. I found it, and I kind of shared that with people and kind of said, wow, I remember where I was in this exact moment, and to see how that has evolved and how I have been able to connect with so many people. It's brought in every idea that I think I've done with my co-teacher came from Twitter or some form of social media, from, you know, the book Teach Like a Pirate to mystery Skypes to, you know, just having cultural exchanges with classrooms. It's all been awesome.
Cool. I'm sure Venezuela does share this characteristics with the United States, where you have unmotivated students, so at least some, right? How do you motivate unmotivated kids?
You know, I think as educators, we think about there has to be a way to get that kid to try to experiment and to discover. And it's really giving them all sets of opportunities, whether it's through literature, through social media, through technology, through science. You know, if I can't help students find their passions, then I need to find a different avenue. And that's really my goal. So, you know, I think offering opportunities for them to do workshops like a Genius Hour Lab, some sort of way to engage them. And I think the message of Teach Like a Pirate is all about that. If they're unmotivated and you're not engaging them, then how are you going to make it so that they're going to want to be in your classroom?
So looking at all the things that you've done in your educational career, what's something that you're really proud of accomplishing?
You know, I feel like I still have so much to learn. But one of my proud accomplishments, I think, came from back in Colorado. I was Teacher of the Year for my district, and I was nominated by my principal, who unfortunately lost her battle to cancer. But that really meant a lot, I think, at that time. She nominated me, and it was just such a privilege and such an honor to have that recognition from her.
One of the things we always kind of like to, and I think this is mainly like a selfish question, but like, do you have any books that you've read maybe over the summer or over the last year that you kind of recommend, you know, for others to read? It doesn't have to be educational, but if you've got that would be great. If not, then whatever you're reading.
Yeah, so I'm such an elementary teacher at heart still, even though I'm teaching this high school course. I just read Wonder, and I know it's a bit of an older book, but I read that on my flights over the summer, and it really is such an empowering book, I think, for not just young elementary students, but really for anyone with the message. And so I wanted to know more, and I'm so glad the author came out with Julian's side of the story and the point of view, and so that really captivated me. That's the book that I recently read, and then, of course, I'm always referring to Teach Like a Pirate.
Well, I'm going to tell you, being an elementary teacher myself, I've talked about this book several episodes already, but you need to read Because of Mr. Turrupt. That book is one of my all-time favorites. It's right up there with Wonder, because I absolutely love Wonder as well. But if you need a good book recommendation, that one is a must-read.
Awesome. I will definitely look into that.
Well, when you're having a really rough day and you're just kind of over it, what do you do to help recenter yourself and bring it all back down?
I think, you know, there's being here, you're going to have some rough days occasionally. We have power outages. We have, you know, knock on wood, electricity goes out. There's no water. And so, given moments at that, I'm right by the Caribbean Sea. And so this point of view of just being able to look at this massive amount of water, and I grew up landlocked in Colorado where never exposed to any water. It's just this gorgeous sight. You never get tired of the sunrise It's the best part of the day. And so when you see that in the morning, that's what fuels you, and you're able to keep going. And if it's been a rough day at school or at work, you come back and you look at that view, and it grounds you. And aside from just, you know, talking to friends, staying connected with family, those are ways to definitely calm yourself down and to kind of just remind yourself you know, you are able to do what's best for kids.
I want to go back to just your school for a few minutes. And what does your school look like? Is it a Venezuelan school, or is it like an international school, or what kind of school is it?
Yeah, we're an international school, and we start from preschool and we go all the way through high school.
Okay.
And we have maybe probably half our population is Venezuelan, and the other half is international, and they're coming from all over.
So for those people who may not be familiar with an international school, how would you describe it?
It's, you know, I think it's an opportunity to really embrace where everyone's coming from, and it's an opportunity to understand everyone's uniqueness and to gain appreciation, to gain outlook. I feel like it's a really collaborative situation where I'm at currently, and you know, we've been tweeting out just how this school year's been going for us. We've been in school for 28 days, so our hashtag #SeatBlick, you can kind of get a sense of what our climate and culture is, and you know, we have students that are really amazing and talented, and we kind of just want to celebrate that.
What is the kind of the demographics look like as far as the teachers are concerned? Are they all from all over the world too?
We do have quite a bit of foreign hires, and a lot of them, I would say, you know, a good portion, maybe 20, 25 of us are from either the United States or from Canada. Primarily. So it's a unique situation where you really do become a community itself, and we have a lot of local teachers. And so again, it's this great camaraderie of this combination of local and international. And you know, we embrace it all.
Awesome. So go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say back to you. Biggest things you've learned over the last year?
I'm sorry.
Chris, you're breaking up pretty bad.
Sorry. You ask it then, Todd.
So, I don't know where you were going, Chris, but so my question is then, what is some advice that your current self would give to your new teacher self, knowing what you know now?
Yeah, I think I would tell myself to take more risks, to not strive for perfection, but to strive for learning opportunities, to kind of take a look at the purpose, the journey, be reflective, balanced, for sure. definitely keep at the heart of it always what's best for students. I think those are really pivotal.
Awesome.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
What I was going to get at is, what's one of the biggest things you've learned over the last year? And you could also ask that as like, maybe what is a mistake that you may have made over the last year?
You know, I think it's really, probably for me, it's not to assume. You know, there's different perspectives, right? And so I really want to keep that outlook of, you know, I want to understand your point of view. Can you explain it to me? Can you tell it to me? To just not assume that a student feels a certain way or because of the way that he or she is acting, and just really reach out and kind of gain an understanding rather than just making judgments.
Awesome. Do you have an interaction with a child or a parent that was one of those kind of moments that you know are just going to stick with you forever?
Yeah, so back in Colorado, I think one of those moments was, you know, I think part of what that burnt out was I went through having to be at a school that you love and it being shut down. And that was really a tough learning experience as well. And it wasn't until like a year later after our school had shut down where I received this message from, you know, a parent that was pretty tough on us as a team and kind of was just questioning our methods and why we were doing certain things. And I think the best email that I got from her was like, you know, I didn't understand what you guys were doing back then, but being a year after the school has closed, I really appreciate everything that you guys have done for my children. And I think, you know, those are moments that being so young, when you're teaching younger students at the elementary level, parents are really protective, as they should be, of what's best for their children. And they really don't see the effects, I guess, until later on when their kids might be a little older. So that I thought was really kind of powerful and kind of stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. What's one of the things we like to kind of end on usually is, what's something you're really passionate about right now in education?
Oh, so many things. I mean, I think there's just so many learning opportunities out there. And I caught the bug for traveling, so I always see all these professional learning opportunities. So this past summer, I attended 5 professional developments, and wow. I'm really excited because I will be at the Miami Device in November, hopefully, if our flights work out. I think the ability to connect through Twitter, but then to go to a conference and meet who you've been talking to virtually in person has such a profound effect. It really takes it to a whole new level. It's like you're meeting a long-lost friend that you haven't seen in such a long time. And so for me, opportunities to learn as an educator and then bringing that back into the classroom, because you want to bring back as many ideas as possible.
Completely agreed.
Man, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I know that, well, you're probably like an hour later than us. Is that right? Are you on, what time zone are you in?
About
we're in central time zone. Yeah, so you're only an hour later. But anyway, you spent a Sunday evening with us, and we truly appreciate that. Are there ways that listeners can connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter. That's probably the best form, and I'm at Young Sauku, so feel free to reach me there.
Absolutely. And you can connect with us at eduallstars.com, and you can also follow us on Twitter at eduallstarshq. And lastly, you can search us out on iTunes, eduallstars with no spaces, and find the other 64. Now we're up to 65 episodes of eduallstars now. There's tons and tons of great guests out there, and just a wealth of information that you can learn from and people you can learn from.
And join us next Sunday. We have a special time at 5 p.m. Central Standard as we interview Yngvi Omarason from Iceland. And then the Sunday after, we will actually be taking that Sunday off. So there will be no Edu All-Stars. I think it's the 28th, Chris, that we won't have it because I will be flying back from D.C. from the BAMI Awards. So we are taking a week off just to kind of catch our breath a little bit, as we could say. We also want to encourage you to check out miamidevice.org or at Miami Device on Twitter. Make sure you see the speakers, the sessions, anything else that you can see about it. It's going to be an amazing conference, and hopefully I will see some of you guys there. Thank you so much again for coming on with us tonight. It was a blast getting to chat with you, Koo. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy.
Thank you.